morning, the scripture reading will be coming from 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 36 and 37. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. You may be seated.
Good morning. It's a great blessing to be able to be with you, and we look forward to our Vacation Bible School coming up this week. It starts tonight. We have a meal for workers at 5:45, and for if you're inviting people, 6 o'clock when the kids and everyone else will begin eating. And then we will have our Vacation Bible School starting inside here at 6:30 and running to 8:30. The theme is training superheroes for Jesus and for God. We are also, as you might have noticed, we're going to be studying David and Goliath tonight, and I'll be studying that this morning, and so you'll be turning to 1 Samuel 17. Also, the adult class tonight, we're going to be looking, Michael and myself will be teaching an adult class, which will basically run from 7 to 8. And we're going to be looking at the plan of salvation throughout the week. And so on Sunday night will be faith, Monday night repentance, Tuesday night confession, and Wednesday night baptism. And so invite your friends and families to come, bring their kids, encourage them to stay and learn and study God's Word together as we think about these important topics. So an exciting week we have this week going on. When we think about training superheroes for God, when we think about these great heroes in the Bible, David is one who certainly could not have been left off that list. And one of the most famous stories in all the Bible involves David and him killing a Goliath. Before we do that, though, I want to think about a man in our history named Teddy Roosevelt, who reminds us of a life that I think was similar to David, though he didn't have the faith that David had in such tremendous faith. But Teddy Roosevelt was weak and sickly as a child. He suffered from terrible asthmatic fits that almost took his life when he was young. He was confined for much of his childhood to his home and required a tutor for his instruction. As a teenager, he decided that he was going to set his mind on developing his body. He chose what he called a strenuous life. Throughout his teenage years and early college time, he would go about a rigorous lifestyle of rowing, boxing, hunting, and insatiable desire to be out riding his horse. He lived a very active life. He would go on to own a ranch in the Badlands. And when he was out there owning the ranch, each morning they would draw straws to see which horse you would ride. He was the owner as they were doing the roundup and things. But he would put in with the men and draw with them, which sometimes meant he would get very, very wild horses to ride that hadn't been broken. He was often thrown off, but he gained the respect of his men by this. And then, of course, he led the Rough Riders in the Spanish-American War. He was a wealthy man, and at first the common soldier who had joined his infantry did not know about him. But he led with such vigor, and he put everything into it that they quickly respected him. And they admired him because he often had their best interests at heart. And he led the charge up San Juan Hill. He himself, not just sending the men, but he led them up the hill in a very courageous act and helped them win the victory. And then when he came back, he took over as the New York City Police Department and cleared out much of the corruption that was going on there and got the city of New York back safe again. And then, of course, he went into politics. And one time he was on his way to make a speech, and an assassin came up and tried to kill him. Thankfully, he had on a heavy overcoat, and he had his speech tucked in his inner pocket here. And it was a thick piece that he had folded four times over, stuck in his pocket. And the bullet was slowed down by his overcoat and by the speech, but it still lodged in between his third and fourth rib. And he was bleeding from this, obviously. But they wanted to take him to the hospital, but he said, no, I've got to go and make the speech first. And he goes and makes the speech first and then goes and sees about that. He was a man who lived a very active and courageous life. And he said this. He said, a soft, easy life is not worth living. If it impairs the fiber of brain, heart, and muscle, we must dare to be great. We must realize that greatness is the fruit of toil and sacrifice and high courage. Courage. He lived a life from his military exploits, from his exploits out in the West, to even his political career, of courage. When we think about the Old Testament, you think about the life of David. He lived a life of vigor, a life of activity, a life filled with adventure, and a life that was filled with courage. And we think about this courageous act that kind of will set David on a course down to great success. It begins with the story of David and Goliath. And if you turn there, we'll notice this great superhero and how he had great courage. And then think about how we need to have great courage today. Because we need more people in America that are living lives of courage and lives of, that are courageous for our faith, that stand up for Christ, that stand out in this society in a courageous way. Notice in our story, as we'll notice the story first, that there is first a champion's challenge. In the early verses of chapter 17, the Philistines, who are the enemies of Israel, are encamped on one side of the valley. And on the other side of the valley, so you have two mountains here, and one is on one side and the other is on the other, and in the valley is between them. The Philistines' army is on one side and Israel is on the other. And for numerous days, in fact, we're going to find out later on that it had gone on for 40 plus days, Goliath of Gath, verse 4, whose height was 6 cubits in a span. We're not exactly sure how tall he was, but some commentators think that he was as tall as 9 feet tall. When you think about this description of his weaponry and how heavy his armament was, it is incredible. It says that they weighed close to 200 to 300 pounds of what he had on his body, his armament, and what he carried in his shield. He may have been a descendant of the Anakim, who are known for being giants in the Old Testament. And his challenge went forth morning and evening, chapter 17, verse 16, for 40 days. He would go out and he would stand. And what in the ancient times, maybe this was brought in by the Philistines because we don't have another reference to this in the Bible, but it seems that they would want to exchange, instead of army upon army, they would go one man against one man. And he was saying, you send your best man to fight me, and whoever wins in that battle, then their army will be victorious. And for 40 days, he issued this challenge, morning and night. Verse number 10, he says, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we might fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now, if you remember, Saul was described as being a head and shoulder taller than the rest of the Israelites. I don't think Saul was Goliath, but Saul was very tall. Saul was the king. Kings were often expected to lead their army in battle and to be brave men. The logical choice was for Saul to fight Goliath. He was tall, he was big, he was the king, it was his responsibility. in many ways, he was the representation of Israel. He wouldn't do it. He was greatly afraid. But there were no other men that were willing to do it. And so this challenge went unmet. But notice in verses 12 through 40, David is going to give a courageous consent. David was the youngest of his brothers. And Jesse had 8 sons. And David was the youngest. 3 of his older sons, verse 13, were in battle. And David, of course, was taking care of the sheep back home. But his father, Jesse, sent David with some food to go down and check on his brothers and some tokens. He goes down and checks on them. In verse 17, he's told to take these things down to him. In verse 19, Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. And David rose early in the morning and left the sheep with the keeper and took the provisions and went that Jesse had commanded him. And when he came to the encampment, to the host was going out to the battle line, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines drew up for battle against one another, army against army. And David left the things in charge of the keeper of the baggage and ran to the ranks and went and greeted his brothers. And he talked with them. And behold, the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, came up out of the ranks of the Philistines and spoke the same words as before. And David heard him. David heard this saying of what Goliath was saying. And David is appalled at this. He says, isn't anyone going to challenge him? Isn't anybody going to stand up and fight against Goliath? And of course, he understands, verse 24 through 27, that a great reward will be given him if he will fight this battle. Yet no one is taking up the battle. And notice David says in verse 26, very importantly, he said to the men who stood by him, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away, notice this word, the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? David says, this is not right. God's very name, the glory and honor of God, is at stake. He is bringing a reproach against our army. He is bringing a slander against our God, and nobody is doing anything about it. His brother is going to protest, David wanting to do something. His brother is going to get upset at him when he wants to do something in verse 28, and even tells him to go back basically and take care of the few sheep he's been tending in the wilderness. He says that he is presumptuous and there is evil in his heart. But David said, what have I done now? Was it not but a word? And David is determined. So David will go to Saul. And of course, Saul's armament is too heavy and too big for David. David will simply want to go because he says that he, through faith in the Lord, has previously killed a bear and a lion, and just as God has delivered him from the mouth of the bear and the mouth of the lion, so he will deliver him from the Goliath. And so David is ready to go. But notice there is now a climactic conflict. What's going to happen in verses 38 through 47? Let me pause just a moment, because y'all know this story. And we even know this in our broader culture. David versus Goliath. When a team that is not expected to win, an underachieving team, plays a big team that's well known as the favorite team, the underdog plays them. We say, oh, it's David versus Goliath. And most of the time, we're pulling for the David, right? We want the underdog to win, the small guy. This, in the original battle, was not a sporting event. This was a man versus a man for their very lives. And more importantly, this was David's God versus Goliath's gods. This was a religious contest. And there was no getting around the issue. This was army versus army, man versus man. There was a whole lot at stake for the nation of Israel and for the identity of God. And so, verse 43, this young, handsome man, David, comes to this Philistine giant. In verse 43, the Philistine said to him, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field." Now that's serious, isn't it? "I'm going to kill you, you little boy. You're nothing but a young little brat coming out here to challenge me. I'm going to take you out. It's going to be no problem for me. I'm going to feed your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." And David said to him, verse 46 or verse 45, "You come to me with the sword, with the spear, and with the javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." David is coming in faith. He's coming in the hope that God will deliver him. It's a climactic conflict. Who's going to win? And of course, David takes his slingshot. He takes five stones, but he only uses one. You know the story. He hits Goliath right between his eyes. Goliath falls. He takes the sword off of Goliath, and he will chop off Goliath's head. Notice in the final thought of this story, it is the conquest of Goliath by David. He has taken Goliath, and he has put him to death. Now that he has won this victory, the Philistines are going to flee. Israel will pursue them, and then they will return, and they will plunder their camp. And David is going to become a very famous man. In fact, the course of Saul's life, because of his cowardice behavior, is going to go down. The course of David's life from this point on, as we're introduced to David, is going to go up. David had a faith that was active, that could not handle God's name being appalled and abused, while the Israelites and the army of Israel had sat there for 40 days doing nothing. David said, "You guys are just going to camp on the hill. I'm not going to camp any longer. I'm going to do something about it." David was courageous. Now, I want to give you four lessons from this story about courage that you and I can take for our lives. Four lessons. Notice number one, courage is awakened and needed when we are appalled at the defilement of God and His holiness. Everyone in camp had become comfortable with God in their individual manhood, being defied twice daily. They got used to listening to it. Now, 40 days is a pretty long time to be reproached, to be insulted. But how many days have to go on before you kind of get used to it? They got used to being reproached, to being made fun of, to Goliath coming out morning and evening. They weren't doing anything about it. When David comes in with fresh eyes, when he comes in with fresh ears, and he hears this, and he says, "Guys, how long y'all been allowing this to go on? Why isn't anybody going to stand up about this? It's like the white elephant in the camp of battle. Everybody knows that's the real issue, but nobody wants to touch it." David comes in, and he says, "I'm appalled at this. I can't stand for God to be defied like this." In our own lives, it takes courage to stand up. And courage is awakened when we are motivated to say enough is enough. When we are upset at what is happening to the name of God, courage comes from holy provocation. When we are provoked because God's name is at stake. I think about in the Bible, when courage is seen, usually it's because someone is fired up about the name of God. When Jesus is fired up in the New Testament and he gets upset, it's because the temple of God is being defiled. And Jesus says, here we are in the temple of God, the beautiful temple of God, a place that is made as a house of worship, a house of prayer, and you have turned it into a den of thieves. And so Jesus goes in, he takes a whip, and he turns over the tables, he drives out the animals, and he sets the house back in order. Why was Jesus courageous? Because he was upset at the holy things being defiled. I think about Phineas. When there was a plague going on because of adultery and fornication with the Moabite women, when the children of Israel were wandering in the wilderness, and there was a plague that had killed thousands of people, and all this adultery had been going on, and Phinehas, the son of Aaron, the priest of God, takes a javelin, and he goes into one of the tents where adultery was going on, and he stabs and kills two people to kill them and stop the plague. Because he had had enough at God's people defying the holy name of God. I think about in the New Testament where Paul confronts Peter in Galatians chapter 2 verse 11 when Peter had withdrawn from the Gentile brethren. And the Bible says that he withstood him to the face because he was not being straightforward concerning the truth of the gospel. When we get upset, it should be based on a holiness. And we ought to be provoked to courage to stand up when God's name is at stake in our own lives. Is courage stirred when we hear the name of God taken in vain? Is courage stirred when people want to run down the church that Jesus died for? Is courage stirred when people want to ridicule or harm the holy institution of marriage? Is courage stirred when people want to speak evil or harmful against the Word of God, the very book that gives us the message of God, and to ridicule its truth within it? Is courage stirred when we need to stand up against those who are harming the church? Courage is stirred in our hearts when we realize that we are the ones who are called to stand up and say, enough is enough, you are speaking against my God. And the glory of God, the name of God, is at stake. Secondly, courage and resolve are tested when others oppose our determination. The challenge of courage is often found in the resistance of others. When David made a decision, he said, I'm going to go meet this giant. His eldest brother, I don't know how many years difference there is, but there had to be a lot of years. His oldest brother, and he was the youngest son, the eighth son. So there's eight sons or seven sons between them. That's a lot of time that had gone on. His older brother said, what are you doing? You can't do this. In fact, he says that he's just being presumptuous. He's being arrogant. He's wanting glory for himself. It seems that old Satan, whenever you determine to do something, he's going to put someone in your ear saying you don't really have to be that radical. Someone says, well, I'm going to become a Christian. I think it's time I put Christ on in baptism. Someone who's not a Christian will often say to them, you sure you want to do that? Are you realize that they may say something about doctrine? You realize that, well, you know, baptism's really not that necessary of a thing or that important of a thing. Why do you want to be baptized? Or they may say disparaging comments about the Church of Christ. Well, you know, there's a lot of churches out there. Why do you want to be a part of that church? They may say disparaging things. They're going to put something to someone in your ear. Or someone says, look, I've been living a sinful life. I've been away from the church. I want to come back to the Lord. And they're going to be restored that night. And someone says, you really think you have to go that far? Are you really think you can change this time? You've said that before. Are you really going to do it this time? I put disparaging comments in their mind, in their head. Someone says, I'm going to make a change. I'm going to do this. And someone will try to talk them out of it. And they'll say things like, Are you really going to do that? You're kind of just trying to get glory for yourself. I think you're trying to draw too much attention to yourself. Courage and resolve are tested when others oppose our determination. When we say, I'm going to do it, it's the right thing to do, I'm going to stand up for God, I'm going to deal with this issue, I'm going to deal with this white elephant in the room, I'm going to deal with it. Other people are going to say, you're going to muddy the water up. You're going to make the situation worse. You're going to harm that. I was talking to a lady in another congregation, another area, and she had got discouraged because she had a teenage grandson, and she had quit trying to fight the battle of getting him to church, and he was just engrossed in video games and that kind of idea. And my sermon had been about trying to endure and not quit, to continue to persevere and do the tough thing. Whenever you try to do the tough thing and you try to get back in there and say, no, look, we need to turn these games off and we need to come to church. We need to be in Bible class. We need to make this a priority. It's probably going to make it a little tense in your home for a little bit. It's probably going to cause some problems when you say, look, we've got to change this marriage relationship. We can't keep going the way we're going. And some people might say, wait a minute, you know, when you really try to make it better, it's really just going to make it worse. Courage and resolve are tested when others oppose your determination. Don't be surprised when you determine to change your life, when you determine to do something courageous, that someone says, maybe out of good intention, they may be saying it out of love, they try to talk you down from making that courageous decision you know you should make. Maybe it's because it often happens with alcoholics or drug abusers. Their friends who are involved in that with them say, wait a minute, you don't really want to do that, do you? Why? Because they don't want to change. They don't want you to change and make them look worse. Courage and resolve are tested. Number three, courage is needed to face our own Goliaths. David had a physical Goliath, but you and I have our own Goliaths. Fear causes us to make the Christian life boring and comfortable when it should be courageous and exciting to take on the fight against Satan. Goliaths still roam our world. Goliaths are things like, you can't talk to me about Jesus. You're not going to talk to someone else about Jesus. It's like a huge thing to be evangelistic. And so Satan builds this Goliath up of we can't be evangelistic because that's radical and that's different. And if we invite people to VBS or we invite others to study the Bible, then that's going to make us look weird and pushy and radical. And so we don't face that Goliath. It may be a Goliath of depression, of insecurity, of low self-esteem, a Goliath of anxiety, a Goliath of debt, or family struggles, or marriage problems, or drugs, or alcohol. I mean, we could make a long list of Goliaths. We could fill Goliath up with Goliaths we face today. We've got Goliaths. And you got your Goliaths, and I've got my Goliaths, and we all face our own struggles and our own Goliaths that are tormenting us, and sometimes they come to you morning and evening. They come to you taunting you morning and evening. I'm still over you. I still got you. You still got to deal with me. and we cower in fear. And we live our life afraid of this Goliath. If we're going to face our Goliath, we've got to have courage. The whole army of Israel listened every day to the Goliath. And David said, I'm not going to listen to Goliath. I'm going to listen to God. And are you going to listen to God or are you going to listen to Goliath? Because Goliath will whisper in your ear morning and night every day. But at some point you got to say, enough listening to Goliath. I'm going to listen to God. And David said, I'm going to listen to God. You got to overcome your Goliath, but it's going to take courage. It's going to take courage. And number four, courage in a leader inspires others to follow God. I heard an amazing story about Alexander the Great, the ancient leader. And of course, he swept across the known world, just destroying and conquering. But early on, when he was sweeping across the land, they'd come to a fortified city. And the men were tired and they were struggling. And they were wanting to withdraw. And they were struggling to have the energy and the stamina to overtake this city and get down over the wall and into the city. And Alexander saw this, and he went running up to the city, and he put a ladder there, and he climbed up that ladder, and all this army saw him, and at first they were just kind of like shocked. Like, what's he doing? You know, the commander's supposed to be in the back, not running up here fighting. And he climbed up that ladder, and he got to the top of the wall, and of course he was fighting them. And about this time, they're all beginning to realize, he's serious, we got to do this. And they all jumped in right behind him, and he jumped over that wall and started fighting them, and they all jumped in there with him, and they conquered that city, and they continued to go forward in their conquering and their exploits. But it talked about how he was such a courageous leader, and his men took courage, and they followed him because they knew he was all in. He was courageous too. David, remember I said earlier that really the story of David and Goliath is the turning point in the story of Saul and the story of David. Saul had been going up. Saul will start going down. He gets occupied with jealousy, with fear, and he focuses now on David. And of course, David has gained the popularity. David is going to be soon anointed king. And David is going to start rising. What's the difference in Saul and David? The big difference, other than their faith in God and their obedience, we could talk about those characteristics. But the big difference in this story, David had courage. Saul did not. And that made the difference in their lives. Courage in a leader inspires others to follow God. It may be in your home that fathers, you need to stand up and be courageous so your family will follow you. In the church, we need courageous leaders. We need courageous Christians in our community, in the schools, in the workplace. We need courageous leaders who are willing to stand up. And when you stand up in whatever sphere of influence you're in, other people will see that courage and they'll follow you. Because they also were sitting back, tired of listening to Goliath, but they were afraid to say anything. This morning, if you need to overcome your Goliath, the first step is by putting Christ on in baptism, by giving your life to Christ. If you've done that, but you need to be rededicated, you need to be restored to the church, don't put it off. If you need to do that in a public way, then please come as together we stand and as we sing.